morning to everyone. It's September 30th, 2013. Dr. Ian Dallas, first time we've met in quite a while. So this starts a new series entitled Medrash. Medrash and Mikra. We'll look at different Midrashim on the Sedra of the week. But I think it's first to begin with an introduction to the topic of Medrash itself. When we think of Medrash, what are Midrashim? People think of stories, of legends, of tales, of parables, of analogies. Often they seem almost superficial, very light, adding some factual detail. Some things appear to us to be impossible. Some look like sound like exaggerations. Others read like history. But what exactly is it? What did Chazal have in mind when they engaged in a compilation of Medrash Rabbah, or Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, or Tanchuma, or for that matter, all the Agada that we find in the Talmud? The Talmud is divided into Talachic section and Agada. So only Agada to that we find in the Talmud. What's the point? For that reason, I think before we get into the Midrashim, which in fact require study, not just reading, but study, let's look at the Rambam's introduction to Perek Chelek in his Perush HaMishnayos, his commentary on the Mishnah. And there, in context, what the Rambam did was he's discussing the Sodei Hadas, specifically began with an explanation of what is Olam Haba. What's the next world? Right, that parak begins, Kol Yisrael Yeshlem Chelek Olam Haba, everyone has a share in the world to come, every Jew. So what exactly is Olam Haba? And the Rambam there distinguished between five different groups of people, all of whom have different conceptions of Olam Haba. It's worthwhile, its own study and its own time. But then he begins this discussion, because each of the five groups, some with very bizarre understandings, other with more reasonable ones, but each of them base their ideas on statements from the Talmud or the Midrashim. So if that's the case, how then are we to understand what the Midrashim are? How should we understand them? The Rama begins, what you have to know, regarding the words of our sages of blessed memory, people are divided into three different groups. And we have to find ourselves in one of the groups, hopefully the last one. Harishon of the first group, the Rov Masharisi, it's the majority, as the Rambam saw it, and as he's seen in his writings as well, what he's heard, Hema Aminim Osam Al Pshatam. They believe the words of the Midrashim literally, the words of Chazal literally. Vein Sovrim Bohem Perish Nista B'Shem Panim. They don't look for any esoteric meaning at all. They just take whatever the statement is, and they take it literally. V'Hanim Na'os, things that are impossible, Kulon Hein Etzlam Mechuyavos HaMetzius. All those seem not only possible, but necessary. If Chazal said it, it has to be so. If we wanted to define these individuals, this group, in one word, all right, two, what would we call them? Literalists or fundamentalists. Chazal said something, they accept it. They spoke in exaggerated language, it doesn't matter, they meant it. They spoke in parables, also doesn't matter, they meant it literally. The Omnam Osim, can they do this? The Fishal Hevinu Achochmos. They don't really understand wisdom. They're very far from discernment. They don't really have perfection that they should be able to arouse themselves and understand anything differently. I mean, it's very common. People are taught a certain way. Like, for example, and this is one reason why I want to engage in the study this year. How do we learn Midrashim? Well, when we're young in elementary school and we're being taught Chumash and Rashi, almost the essence of what we're being taught are the Midrashic explanations. The Nachash had legs, and the legs were cut off. All right, just to take one at random. So we don't know any better, and then we begin to just leave it at that. For many people, their understanding of Torah is is exactly, there's a stasis that takes place. There's a almost a paralysis of sorts, since their first impression of the Torah and the stories is one that they gained when they were children, so that view always remains. You know, Adam and Chava walking and having a nice conversation, and then Adam gets distracted, and the Nochash speaks to Chava and tells Chava to eat from the tree, and she does, and she gives to all these stories. When you start asking questions, then we come to this breakdown of the Rambam into three different groups. Because the first group will say, no, it's all meant literally. Every story, every detail, every fact. The lo matzu ma'or she'or osam, they don't really have anyone to prompt them to say, shelo kivnu ha'chachamim zichronam uvracha b'chol divrehem ha'yesharam ha'mesukanim. Maybe what you're understanding is not quite what Chazal taught. That's not what they had in mind. Ela ma'shevinu lehen lefidaitam mehem v'shehem al-pshutam. No, they reject that. And they just understand according to their intellects, the common way that they understand it, and that's it, simple pshat. V'afal pisha hanir miktas divrayam yeshme min adibav arichuk min asechel. And even though sometimes Chazal will say things in such a way that they seem to be far-fetched, even hard to understand, ad she'ilu supar pshuto la'ame ha'aretz koshka la'chachamim, such that if you just tell the story to someone who doesn't know it, not to mention to wise people, how you temei him b'hizbonim b'hem, they would be astonished when they try to understand this, and they would say, heich yitachein she'yeh ba'olam odom she'achshav kaza, how could there be a person who would think that this is the way it was, o she'yamin she'yamun l'nechona, or that they'll believe that this is the correct belief. Kal v'chomesh yita b'einov, how much more so that they will not praise it. V'zo hakat aniyas hadas yesh etzter lehem l'sich l'sam. This group, impoverished of wisdom, we have to feel sorry for them, for their foolishness. Because here they are honoring and exalting the sages, kafi datam, they think they're honoring them by taking every word literally. V'heim mashpilam osam b'tachlis hashiflus, v'heim einam mevinim zeh. But instead, rather than exalt them, they end up demeaning them. V'heim v'chay Hashem yisparach, God forbid, ki akad hazos me'abdin hadras hator mafilin zahra. This group, they forfeit the luster of Torah, and they dim its radiance. Umesimim Torah Hashem behefech hamechuvan ba. And in fact, they put God's Torah they construe God's Torah the exact opposite of what it was intended. Lefish Hashem yizbarach on v'torah tmima. God said about the Torah itself, Asher yishmuun eiskol chukim o'ela ve'amru rakam chacham v'navon agoy agor ozeh. It says in Devarim, the nations of the world, we will hear of the wisdom of the Torah, and they'll say, what a wise and understanding people this is, a great people, because ki chokhmasam uvinaschem ane'amim, the Torah is our wisdom and discernment in the eyes of the nations. But this group speaks about the words of Chazal as if they're, it becomes foolishness in their eyes. So rather than have the nations of the world look at us and say, "Rakam chacham v'navon agoy gadol azeh," kisheshomim osam shar umos omrim, "Rakam sochol v'navo hagoy hakaton azeh." What a foolish and empty people that they believe these legends. And in fact, that's often the way it's presented, right? Isn't there a book, Legends of the Talmud? Legends of the Talmud, without any elaboration, without any attempt to explain it or understand it or to penetrate beneath the surface of the stories. Rov Mashosin El Hadashanim, he said that's what most Dashanim do as well. They'll just take a pasuk, and there's almost a free reign, sometimes even free association. Now the problem is, of course, that, you know, there's a klal that's out there in the Hamon, Ein Shol and Al Adrash. Ever hear that? You can't ask questions on a drasha, just a drasha. All right, we should count ourselves lucky if people don't take the same approach to halacha in the Torah, but they just look at psukim or look at a sifin shulchan aruch and they interpret it the opposite of its intent, and they say, well, I have the right to interpret. So maybe we'll think that there are fewer consequences if one does that in agada, in medrash, than halacha. There are fewer consequences to some extent, but what really is agada and medrash? They're the tool that Chazal used to convey ideas and values and the philosophy of Jewish life. So if a person has distortions in that area, it could be spiritually fatal as well. One of the approaches that eventuate in having this type of flawed spirituality is this first cut. And he says the Darshanim are guilty of it. Sheim Eforshin Modin Lahamon Ha'am Masha'enam Yodim. They just explicate and inform the masses what they themselves don't know. They'll teach in stories. Umi Tein Achash Liyodim Havinu Shayushoskin. Would that, since they know and understand nothing, would that they would just be silent. Mi Tein Acharesh Tacharishun Tilehem Chachma. Better to be silent, and people will construe that as wisdom. Or better they should say, rather than give a distorted view of what the Chachmah is saying, better they should say, I don't know what they mean by this. So it's a more intellectually honest approach. Rather than try to fit the square peg of one's personal pshat into the round hole of some abstruse comment of the Chachamim, better to say nothing. But who can abstain from darshaning? But nonetheless, they can't abstain, and they think they do understand it, and so they endeavor to teach and to explain to the people what they themselves understand with the paucity of their intellect. Lo masha dar omer chachamim, not what Chacham said or had in mind. V'darshim barashayam, drashas, brachos, chelik, etc. Mila b'mila. And they just give the drashas, in the end, drashas shel dofi. What characterizes this group? The first cut? The first cut is they're literalists. You know, as they esteem the Chachamim, which is a milo. They esteem the Chachamim. They esteem them so much that they're not able to distinguish between when something is meant literally and something is meant figuratively. So in the end, they do a disservice to Torah and they harm themselves. That's the first group. Yes. No, they're not guilty. You're correct. If they have no teachers, they're not guilty, but then they should better opt to say, we don't know. We don't know. One of my memories, my first year in the rabbinate, a long time ago, I was in Queens, and a fellow walked up to me. I think he was learning the Gemara that related to demons. And told me that, in his words, you know, Rahman al-Islam, Chazal, they were primitive, they were believed in fables and non-existent entities. It shows you just the lack of sophistication that they had. So I gave him the correct shot, and I explained that Chazal dealt with it in such a way, not because they believed in it necessarily, but because the Hamon believed in it. The people were very superstitious, and so they dealt with it in a way to try to rationalize the people's understanding and to wean them away from those corrupt thoughts. So he said to me, well, I like my pshat better, which, you know, happens as well. So I said, well, think of it this way. If there's a statement of Chazal and you have a choice of understanding it rationally and understanding it in a way that's critical of Chazal, then you're making a choice. That's bechira ready. You're making a moral choice to choose foolishness and arrogance over correct understanding. Well, that approach is really the second cut. The second cut, Ashniya, Rabim Gamkin, there's also a numerous group, the Heimosim Shero Divrei Chachamim, Oshmum Bevino Osam Apshutam. They see the words of Chazal and they understand it simple pshat, the simple understanding. V'choshvu shalokivnu chachamim bo zulasi mashemora olof pshat hadavar. And they think that Chazal intended that very point to say nothing else but foolishness. V'heim bo musakel osam ulegan osam. And because of that they come to criticize Chazal, to impugn them, umotzim diba mashein bo diba, and they castigate that which is above castigation. V'yalegu al derech chacham lirgan, they'll even mock, they'll deride the words of Chazal occasionally. V'sovrim shehem nevonim yoser, v'shesichlom yoser zach mehem, and they deem themselves to be wiser and their intellects more refined than the words of Chazal. V'shehem alem hashom Chazal who are niftim, they were fools, gruei asechel, inferior intellects, schalim b'chlal ha-metziyus, ignorant regarding reality, ad shelo hayu masigim dvar chochma v'shum panim. So they really understood nothing at all. V'rov ha-nichshalim b'zeh shibush, and most people stumble in this error, are those ha-misyachasim l'chochmas ha-refuah, doctors. Astrologers, meaning it's not a criticism of medical people because Ram was a doctor himself. It means people who fancy themselves intellectuals. People who fancy themselves intellectuals, they'll take these legends, these statements of Chazal, and say, "Well, I don't believe them, but they believe them. And if they believe them, so how inferior intellectually must they have been?" And of course, that's always accompanied by, why then should we listen to their words of Torah or of Halacha if they were in fact so gruei hasechel? Lefi shehem b'machashavtam nivonim. They in their own minds are wise. V'chachamim b'einehem, and in their own eyes they're chachamim. U'mechudadim u'filosofim. They consider themselves to be very sharp, very bright philosophers. How distant are they really from true philosophers of the truth? They're even more foolish than the first group, and many of them are complete imbeciles to begin with. They are a cursed sect because they try to remonstrate with great and exalted people, whose wisdom is clear to all wise. And these fools, if they really engaged, they exerted themselves in wisdom. They knew exactly how to arrange ideas, how to write ideas of metaphysics, how to give over these ideas to the public. They would understand exactly why Chazal wrote the way they did. The Avinu Chelek HaMasi Min HaFilosofia, they would understand even more the practical aspects from the philosophy. Oz Hayu Mivinim Im HaChachamim Zal Chachamim Imlo, then they would really understand whether the Chachamim or Chazal were really wise or not. So the flaw of the first group was a flaw of simplicity. They're fundamentalists. What's the flaw of the second group?
Arrogance.
Arrogance, exactly. Arrogance. Which group is worse? The second group is worse. That's what Rambam says. They're scholem yosem and akas rishona. Why are they worse? Because they're further from the truth. In other words, the first, at least I have respect for Chazal. The respect for Chazal. So therefore, I had, like you said, if someone then came along and taught them properly, so they would, for the most part, accept it. The other group not. The other group has already disconnected from the words of Chazal, and they think they're the wisest. So you have the fundamentalists. By the way, it's also possible that if the fundamentalists were taught by someone, they'd also reject it, because they become very very connected, very attached to the idea that every word of the Agada, of the Medrash, is literally true. Even if it's the opposites. Yes?
Think about how that puts the responsibility on a board to hire teachers for kindergarten, first and second grade.
Yes, correct. Although, truth be told, it's very hard to convey the true ideas of Medrash to a four-year-old or a five-year-old. But there's a reason why it was written that way, and now we'll understand. But Kadash Lishis, the third group, V'heim Chai Hashem Ma'atim Ad Ma'od, they're so small a number, Ad She'ein Roy L'Krosom Kat, you can't even call them a group. Elokamoshi Yemel Hashem Ashmin, it's like calling the sun a species. V'raki Yechidah, the sun is singular. There's only one sun in our solar system. So it's not a group as much as the Rambam says, like a handful of individuals. These are people who it's clear to them the greatness of the sages and the perfection of their intellects. And especially in those areas that touch on the realm of truth, of insight into these areas that are very profound. And even you find that the words of Chazal in the Gemara, for example, are scattered about. It's not written, there's no Maseches Agadah. They're implanted almost in different areas of Shas. Heymar Mashleimusam. To that, they don't see that as poor writing. On the contrary, that itself testifies to the perfection of the authors. V'chi heim hisigu ames, and they have attained the truth. V'shen zbar gam kenetzlam menias hanimna u'metzius u'mechuyav. They know the impossible is impossible. They know the what is reality has to be. They know the Chazal are not talking nonsense. When it's Am Yisrael, it's very clear, it's verified to them, confirmed. That the words of Chazal have something revealed, right? The imagery of the parable, or the allegory, and they have a nister as well. They have a hidden aspect, which contains the idea. And they know that Chazal, in everything, that whenever they spoke of something that was impossible, they spoke about it in a way of riddle, by way of riddle and parable. That is the way of the greatest of the sages. That's how Shlomo began Mishlei. Mishlei is filled with this, to understand parables and allegories, the words of the wise and their riddles. What's a riddle? It's something that the intent is what's hidden, what's concealed, not what is revealed. Achudan alachem chidah, case of Shimshon Agibor. Lefisha divre chachamim kulam badzvorm helyonim, shema tachlis, omnam hechidu mashal. Then the words of the sages are sublime. They touch on the fundamental ideas of our faith, and that's the purpose. So they are concealed in a riddle and a parable. Who's going to criticize them for disguising their ideas in parables? And they analogize them to things that are very common that the average person will understand. Ritzani Loma, Shlomo. Who's to quibble with Chazal in the Medrash Agadah? Shlomo HaMelech did it. Shir Shirim is all of Mashal. Mixus Kohela, certainly Mishlei. Eich Yikshal Leinu Lizbor Perush Al Divrei Milotzim Yipshotim Kedesh Hayevus Lasecha Liyaskim Imo Emes from Kisvei HaKodesh. And who is going to struggle to explain their words, take them out of the simple pshat, so that it becomes appropriate or pleasant to the intellect and agrees with the truth, And with the other words in Tanakh, Vehim ba'atzmam sovrim b'suke and mikro matzimosim mipshatam u'mesimin osa masho. When they themselves took certain psukim in the Torah and understood them as mishalim. Take the classic one, right? What is it? How does the Torah describe tshuva? One aspect of tshuva, u'maltem es farlach levachem. You should circumcise the hardened coverings of your heart. Does that require an operation? No. But a fundamentalist will say, oh, that's what you have to do. So you have to remove a layer of the heart in order to... So the Torah itself spoke in these languages, this language, this style. Why shouldn't the Chachamim? The Hu Ha Mess. And he mentions a few other psukim along these lines as well. Throughout Tanakh, you find it's the way of the wise. Now, why is the way of the wise? So now you see the beauty of the way Chazal understood it. And I think why we're not wrong, although it's not completely edifying to teach children that way, it's because when you speak, when we try to explain the words of the Torah, the words of Chazal, and use grandiose language, Ogmel Chabashim was 100 Amos high, or something like that, then the mind retains that. The mind retains things which seem exaggerated. And then, since the mind has now retained the imagery of the allegory, it's much more, excuse me, it's much more apt to try to endeavor to uncover the idea. But a child is not on that level to uncover the idea. You have to wait for adulthood. You hope, of course, you ask the question and don't fall to one of the other two groups. But now that you retain the image, there comes a time when the intellect begins to mature, when you start to ask, what does this mean? Okay? And that really is the ideal. What's the danger? Exactly. As Sandy said also. And it's a no... And
having someone...
Yes. When the Rebbe is faced with such a question, or the Mohr for that matter, and says, we don't ask such questions, or you're not the Kohar for asking that question, that becomes... deadly to a child's growth. Devastating.
Frightening because so many kids
go off the dark because of that. Kid has a maturing intellect, asks a simple question about Torah, wants an understanding on his level, whether he's 12 or 15 or 20, and the Rebbe just slaps him down because the Rebbe doesn't know. And rather than using the approach that he said to the first cut, saying, it's a very good question, I don't understand. I'll ask someone who knows. Or I don't understand some things we can't understand, can't understand everything.
Saying it's a good question.
Right, exactly. And instead, to in certain parts of our world, it's a pedagogical approach, but it encroaches even into our world on occasion, where the teacher will say, don't ask such questions, or how dare you question Chazal, and that becomes a disaster, a catastrophe, almost undoing Chazal's intention. But we are supposed to accept that people who are teaching Torah should have either some familiarity with what they're teaching, or at the very least some humility to say, I don't know, when they don't know. Turn the page, let's finish up. And the Rambam says, because now he's going to begin discussing what Olam Haba is. Imatame Ayin, if you, the dear reader, may achas mishteki tosarishonos, if you're part of the first groups, Al Tashkach Bidhorai, stop reading right now. Don't go on. Don't pay any attention to what I'm saying. And not even one word from this matter. Because nothing here will be pleasant or understandable. It'll only harm you, and you'll begin to hate the words of Chazal. And how, take for example, certain foods that are light in quantity, but in quality they're very good, they're very healthy. How are you going to give them to someone to enjoy, to a person he's used to eating bad foods, meat, unnatural, they mean heavy foods. I meant meat. You can't, it's hard to tell someone who's used to meat and potatoes to say, get by, you know, on broccoli and lettuce. Not asparagus, right? Vile weed. But in truth, this pshat, this approach of the third cut will harm him. He'll hate it. Look at people who have become accustomed to eating onions and garlic and fish in Egypt, and they complained, we are disgusted already with his insubstantial bread, meaning the mud was the perfect food. And yet, because they had become accustomed, it was an ethereal, spiritual food, because they had become accustomed to grosser foods, onion, garlic, meat, etc., fish, they couldn't handle it. If you're from a third group, and you see something that does not seem rational, does not accord with your wisdom, Tamod v'tizboning bo, you should stop, stand, contemplate, v'teida shehu, you should know it's chidu mashal, it's meant by Chazal as a riddle and as a parable, v'tishkav ashuk halev, v'trud harayon v'chibro b'sorazo, and you should then quiet the oppression of the heart, meaning if your heart's troubled by it, it'll find its peace. In this particular work, and you'll concentrate to acquire the intention of this wisdom and the straight way of thinking, you'll be able to understand both the resolution as well as the riddle itself. The pasuk says at the end of Koheles to find desirable words, words that are upright, words of truth. Then you look in this particular book. He means here the Perush HaMishnah, and it'll help you. Later on, by the way, in the same essay, the Rambam says that he hopes to write a book that will explain all the Midrashim, give all the ideas, he'll know both. Unfortunately, he never lived to be able to do it. But he did write one book, of course, that's designed for the first cut, and that is Mor Nevuchim. On some level, the first cut is, for the third cut, not the first. It's for the Nevuch, the person who's confused, perplexed by certain ideas, so Rama, to the best extent he could, clarify. Now, just by way of introduction, because you see this all the time in Chumash, I copy here number 3, the famous Rashi in Bereishis Paragimel Pasuk Ches. The Pasuk says, you can read it there, Vayishmu Adam and Chava heard Kol Elokim Misalech Bagan. They heard God's, the sound of God, so to speak, walking in the Garden of Eden, and they became afraid and they hid. And God said to them, why are you hiding? Alright? Anyway, Rashi says, Vayishmu, and they heard, Yesh Midrashei Agado Rabim. There are many, many different Agados. Uchvar Sidrub Rabo Seder Al Mechonam V'Vreshus Rabba. And Chazal organized all of them in their proper place, in Vreshus Rabba the Medrash, we'll learn in a moment. Uvisham Midrashos, and other Midrashim as well. Va'anilo Basi El L'Pshuto Shemikro. Rashi says, I only came to explain the simple pshat in the pasuk, ula agado hamiyasheves divrei hamikra davar davur al ofanav, and to use the agado, the statement of Chazal, that best conveys the intent of the pasuk, each point in its own framework. That's what Rashi intends. So Rashi, in fact, understood if you have a panoply of midrashim, you have 3, 4, you can choose on a pasuk, which one did Rashi choose? Rashi would choose the one that best articulated the idea that Chazal were trying to articulate. Of course, Rashi also has to be understood. That's why you find dozens and dozens of super commentaries on Rashi. All right? For that reason. And he explains here what the simple pshat is, about they heard Kol Hashem Misalech Bagan. Okay. Let's take 2 Midrashim, one famous very famous and one less famous. Perek Vav Pasuk Tes, on this week's Edra, Noach. Eila Toldos Noach, it's number 4 in the sheet. Eila Toldos Noach, these are the this is the genealogy of Noach. Before it gets to the Torah gets to the children, the Torah describes Noach. Noach Ish Tzadik, he was a righteous man. Tamim Hayah B'Dorasov, he was perfect in his generations. Es Soilokim, his Halech Noach. Noach walked with God. Now Rashi there quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin that says, Yesh Dorshin L'Shevach, Yesh Dorshin L'Gnai. There are those who interpret Tamim Hayah B'Dorasov as positive, as reflecting well on Noach, and there are those who interpret it as reflecting poorly on Noach. We have to ask a basic question. Why must we even enter this realm? As the Torah says that Noach was a tzaddik, why would we think to say that Noach was not such a tzaddik? I mean, why would you criticize him? Why question what the Torah says? All right, Mela, the Torah uses the word B'dor sub in his generations, which is a red flag, but the Torah is answering one question we have to ask. The question which really, as we begin this week's Sedra, as we ended last week's Sedra, Noach Motzachem Bene Hashem, we have to ask ourselves, why Noach? Why Noach? Now, Chazal were of two minds as to the quality of Noach, and that's in B'dor Asov. So let's take it up from this. Let me just add one other thing. Interesting Medrash later on, Rashi quotes both opinions. The second pasuk or third pasuk, Torah says, Sohar Tasela Teva, Ve'alamat Techalena Milmala. That they, Noach made a tzohar in his ark, in the teva. What's a tzohar? So Rashi has two opinions. One is chalom, a wind you see outside. And what's the other? It's right there, Evan Tovo. It's a precious stone, a stone that illuminated the teva, the ark inside. What's the difference in the two? So you see the same machlokas here. If Noach is a tzaddik gomor, he's not only interested in his own salvation, but in those of others as well. That's the chalom. Chalom means it lets light come in, but lets him see outside as well. And that's why we have windows in a shul. Shul has to have windows, because we're not just wrapped up in ourselves. We have to be able to see the outside world also. Unfortunately, the only room here that has windows is the Beis Medrash. Everything else is stained glass. You can't see outside, but... That's, I get light from there, from where I sit. That's right. That's on top. That's correct. Okay, that's right. So that's one shot. That Sohar is... Hello, the window, because that's Sada Gomor. What if he's not just Sada Gomor? Then he's Zochet with Evan Tova. An Evan Tova, precious stone, just gives light inside, not outside. So you see the same dichotomy here. Okay, let's look. Rashi's really quoting the Gemara Sanhedrin. Let's look at the Medrash Rabbah. It's in, I think, Lamed Tes. Bidorosov, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia. Now again, you remember that the Rambam said that this, we're in the third Kat, I hope. And we have to understand everything using our seichel and analyze and define and understand both sides and why they're saying what they're saying. So B'dor Asov, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia. Two opinions. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Yehuda Amar, B'dor Asov, Hoya Tzadik. He was righteous in his generations. Ha'ilu. I'm sorry, Hoya Tzadik, yeah. Ha'ilu Hoya B'dor Asov Moshe. Of B'dor Shel Shmuel, if he lived in Moshe's generation, or Shmuel Anovi's generation, lo hoya tzaddik. He would not have been considered a tzaddik at all. He was a relative tzaddik. And now Rabbi Yehuda explains, B'shuk Samaya Sovchin La'avira Sagi Nahor. In the market of the blind people, they cry out to someone who sees a little, Sagi Nahor is full of light. What's the that's an interesting phrase. It's a very famous phrase. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Famous statement attributed to Erasmus, the Dutch theologian of 1500s. All right, plagiarist. He took it from the Medrash. Bishuk Smaya Sovchin La'avira Sagi Nahar. In the marketplace where everyone is blind, the person who has even one eye sees a little, he's considered to be full of light. That's right. Then you're the Medrash? He might have, because the Catholics don't just study the Talmud and the Midrash.
You know, that's true. I thought it was
in Skokie, yeah.
And he went to the University of Chicago with priests.
That's right. Well, you do know the first Talmudic dictionary, the Aura, was written at the at the behest of the church. They want to be able to understand. It was written Hebrew American to Latin, so you understand it. In any event. So now Rabbi Yehuda continues. Moshal le'echad shehayu lo martef echad shel yayin. A parable to a person who had a wine cellar. Hotza chovis achas umtza shel chometz. He opened one barrel of wine and it had turned to vinegar. Shnia, second, kain. Shlisha, same thing. I'm sorry, shnia, kain. Third one, shlishis umtza koseis. He found that it was fermenting but had not yet turned to vinegar. Okay? Amarin le kosesu. This is koses. He started to take that barrel out. And they said to him, no, it's fermenting. It's not good. Amar lahon, viz hochatav mina. Is there anything better than this? Meaning the taste is not good anymore. It's not quite wine, but at least it's not completely impotable. It's not vinegar. That's what it means here. Amrle lokach bedarosa v'yetzadik, ha'ilu haya bedarosh Moshe or bedarosh Shmuel lo hayetzadik. So you have two mashalim here. One is to the one-eyed man in the kingdom of the blind. That was Noach, and the other is the barrels of wine, the wine cellar. Two had turned to vinegar. One was fermenting. It wasn't quite the best quality wine anymore, but at least it was still potable, and that's why he took it out. Okay. We have to understand why you need two, and what exactly the point that's being made. Next, Reb Nechemya. The Medrash continues. Reb Nechemya Amar, Uma im bedarasav hoya tzadik. The Torah emphasized he was a tzadik in his generation. Ilu hoya bedarashal Moshe, bedarashal Shmuel, al chaskam v'chama. If he lived in the generation of Moshe and Shmuel, had the positive reinforcement of society around him, he would have been even greater. All right? Mushal, here's his mushal. Litzlochishel afar simon. To a jar of afar simon is a balsam oil. Mukefes samid pasil. And it was covered. Umanachas ben akvaros was put amidst graves. Forget graves. Think of a morgue, an open morgue in ancient times. Vayarecha nodev. And the smell of this fragrance extended. And so it diffused somewhat the odor from the graves. The ilu hoya chusla kvaros ala haskama v'kama. But if you take that same perfume bottle and put it outside, so then the fragrance would be even more beautiful. So that was Noach. Noach was this slochisho afar simon that was placed bein akvaros. All he could do was cancel out the others. But if you took them outside, then it would have an even greater fragrance. So that's his first mushroom. Second mushroom. I guess I say why you need two. Second mushroom. Libsula shahaisa shruya bishuk shalzonos. Take a nice young girl, Beis Yaakov, Mayanot, whatever. Nice Jewish religious girl, and you put her in a brothel, Rachman al-Islam. The marketplace, right? Times Square, before Giuliani came. V'yotza la shemra. And even there, she retained her holiness, her morality. Ilu haisa b'shukon shel ksheros. If she was in an environment of like-minded people, moral girls, ala haskama v'kama. How much more so would she be pious? Uma im bedarosav hayat tzadik. If in his generations he was righteous, ilu haya bedarshal Moshe or bedarshal Shmuel, alachas kam v'kama. Had he lived in the generation of Moshe or Shmuel, he would have been even more righteous. Okay, that's Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Yehuda says no. He was a relative tzaddik. Rabbi Nechemya says No, he was a perfect tzaddik. He would have been even greater in a different generation.
Okay.
Where does it, so we have to, the question was, why Noach? So now we're understanding. Some hold he was an equivocal figure, others hold he was a great figure. What exactly is the pshat here? So I think the answer is this. You want to think about it? These are all puzzles that have to be unraveled. And you find two different pshatim that are taking place here. One is, take the first one, that involves human beings. Notice, by the way, in the two in the examples that were given, Rabin and Rechemiah, one involves human beings as part of the analogy, and the other involves material, in the barrel or in the perfume bottle. So according to the first pshat, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Noach was flawed, but his flaw would not be noticeable in the context of the society. Thus, he's okay, all right? He's not going to change. Like the one-eyed man is not going to change, but he can't become better. And so he's inherently limited. In other words, the first pshat is, Noach was a tzaddik, but he was not a tzaddik who was subject to any type of spiritual growth. He was stuck. He was stuck because of his generation. There's only so much different than he could be from his generation. That's the first pshat. The second pshat relates to the chavios. He had two wines, two barrels of wine. Both have become vinegar, meaning they worsened, they deteriorated. And now the owner found one barrel that was a koseis, that was already fermenting, that was flawed, but it was still salvageable. What's the second shot? That Noach was better than his generation. We understand that. He could remain better, but God saved him because he could get worse also. Notice in the first example, the one-eyed man is not getting any worse. Status quo, staying the same. So he's rewarded for the level that he's on, which is different from his generation. But in the second scenario, he can get worse. And that's why God intervened to save Noah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, through the two pshatim here. One is that God saved Noah. He wasn't the most perfect tzaddik, but nonetheless he was better than his generation, and for that he deserved salvation. And the second pshat is, he was better than his generation, but had God not intervened right then, Noah would have been lost also. He would have succumbed. That's Rabbi Yehuda's pshat. And now you find that Rabbi Nechemiah says the exact same thing, only the opposite. Okay? So you take his first example of the Tzlocha Shel Afar Simon, Munachas Ben Akvaras, that Noach made an impression on his generation. You can't say he didn't. He even asked them. They ridiculed him because of their level, but at least he made an impression on them. That means Recha, no Dave. His fragrance extended. His fragrance canceled out the generation. That is to say, the status quo remained. The status quo was such that Noach, that the generation had to be destroyed, but Noach will be saved. He has to be rewarded for his good. So all he did was he canceled out the bad smell, but that remains. What is that similar to? The status quo? That's similar in the opposite sense to Rabbi Yehuda's one-eyed man in the kingdom of the blind. What's the second case of the Basula Bein Azonos Bein Aksheros? That the Basula will inevitably be ruined if she remains too long in the Shukshel Zonos. That's now comparable, again, in the opposite, to the barrels of wine and vinegar. But she would be exalted and become even morally superior if she was put the Shukon Shel Ksheros. So now you see the two differences in the Dor HaSov. Would Noach have been able to retain his level and now therefore deserve reward for that? Or would he have lost his level and therefore God owed it to him, so to speak? Noach Motzachim B'nei Hashem in order to save him. That's one medrash. That's a famous one. The next one is not famous at all. Yes?
Why wasn't
Well, just like in the second case, it's not one zona, it's two control zonas, yeah. In other words, once you have the majority is not good, then what will the minority tzaddik do in order to retain his values? Okay. If you look at Pasuk, Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yates, and Chav.
Actually, what we're saying is that both are true.
They're both true. Oh, there's no question about it. They're both true.
They're both true.
Right.
It's just a different illustration.
Exactly. Exactly. These are the ideas. Chazal tried to probe exactly why Noach was saved. Was it because of his inherent reward for his level, or was it because of the danger of his losing his level, which would be unfair? What's the comparison to that? It's in last week's Edra. Vayishalech Hanoch Eso Akim Ve'enenu Ki Lokach Oso Elokim. There you find the parallel. Hanoch died at the young age of 365 because he was in danger of succumbing to the influences of his generation. You see, the environment itself is a very powerful force on a person. Shul, community, family, etc. Okay, next. Perek Zayin Pasuk Yates, Amayim Gavru Me'od Me'od Al Ha'aretz. Flood came, and the waters of the flood prevailed over the entire earth, or the land of Israel, according to some, but that's not our Indian now. The water covered all the mountains, all the high mountains that were underneath the heavens. It was 15 amos high, the water prevailed, and it covered the mountains. Okay. 15 amos. 15 amos are 25 feet over the surface. Alright? Okay, now here's the question. Look at number 7. Chamesh Yisrei Amos. And again it's Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechamia. They never got along, it seems. Always arguing with each other. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Nechamia. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Chamesh Yisrei Amos Bahar, Chamesh Yisrei Babikah. Rabbi Yehuda says it was 15 amos high over the mountains, as well as 15 amos high over the plains, all right, over the valleys. What does that mean? It means the water was not on one level. The water followed the surface of the ground and it went up the mountain and it covered all 15 amos. That everything was 15 amos high, but like it was in terms of walls almost, or the walls, the water itself made hills. It just followed the topography perfectly. 15 amos high. Chamesh Yisrei Amos Milmala Gavru Hamayim. Reb Nechemia said no. What does the pasuk say? Chamesh Yisrei Amos Vahar. It was 15 amos above the mountains of Obabika Kol Shehen, in the valleys, in the plains, whatever it was, it was. Meaning, according to Reb Nechemia, the water was on one level. One level. The high point was 15 amos above the mountains. But there'll be more water, obviously, covering the valleys to reach the level of 15 amos over the mountains, and less water over the in the hilly areas, the mountainous areas, because you didn't need that much. According to Reb Nechemia, the water level was flat. The surface of the flood was flat. According to Rabbi Yehuda, since the waters were all one level, it was 15 amos across. It was much more jagged, the waters of the flood. Okay, what's the machlokas? How much water? It'll be a description. It'll be a fact, historical fact. But the fact is, rarely do Midrashim ever convey to us historical facts. Rarely. It happens occasionally. Rarely, because not the intent of Chazal. They were not historians. They were anti-history, but they were not historians. By the way, you notice right here an interesting thing. Reb Nechemia tries to adhere to the pshat of the pasuk much more closely than Rabbi Yehuda does. Rabbi Yehuda implants a drash in the pasuk, alright? It's not that he's denying the pshat, but he's extending the pshat as much as he can. Rabbi Yehuda is a hear more of the pshat in both the first case, because the simple pshat is tamimay of darasav. He's a tzaddik, he's perfect in generations. Period. Why do we have to question to see if he, what kind of tittus he wore? So that's the pshat. Like here, the pasuk says chamesh yisrei amam mil malag of ramayim by chusukol arim. The waters cover the mountains. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is much more expansive in his view. What's the machlokas here? So I would suggest, and I have to tell you, there's no right or wrong. These are just my own thoughts. The question that they're dealing with here is, to what extent did God employ miracles in the flood? To what extent did God employ Nisim in the flood? Rabbi Yehuda amplifies the Nes, because Rabbi Yehuda is, and Rabbi Nechemi contracts the Nes. What Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that if the waters are not on one level, it was quite a sight, like a ski slope almost. It's like snow. In fact, the Mepharshim say this. Like snow. Snow goes up and down the mountains. It'll be more concentrated in the lower areas, but whatever it is, it adheres to its surface. Exactly.
Like waves.
Yes.
Waves that are stationary.
Yes. So Rabbi Yehuda maintains that the deviation from nature that God imposed here was a dramatic one. All right. Reb Nechemia, though, limits it. What's interesting is that we generally try to limit, to reduce the number of Nisim rather than increase them. As God created the world, and part of creation was fixing the laws of nature, right? Right? What was the Shvi Svi HaMashvi? When Shabbos started, the laws of nature were fixed, never to be changed. Chok Nasan V'lo Yavar, until God determined on his own interests, when it had to be changed. And even this big machlokas in the Chachamim, whether these were all Nisim or implanted in creation, Erev Shabbos Ben HaShemashos, like the Mishnah in Avos, whether God can intervene, Kirtzona, whatever he wishes, in nature. Deviation from nature is held to be a yirida, a descent. It's not. It seems exciting on the surface, but it's a descent. It really takes us away from our true understanding of God as the Borei Olam. Rabbi Yehuda maintains that no, the nace here was a dramatic nace, an exciting nace, visible even to Noach. Rabbi Nechemia maintains, no. Was there a deviation from nature in the Mabul? Even hard to say. Some midrashim say yes, others no. Rabbi Nechemia said, not necessarily, you don't have to say that. When Noach looked out the window of his teva, all he saw was the surface of water, like a flood that Rahman al-Islam we have in our world also. In different parts of the world, several times a year, where the water, in fact, covers everything. Land, buildings, sometimes even mountains are inundated, but nonetheless, that's nature. That's not the direct Yad Hashem. That's the indirect Yad Hashem, his Ashkocha through nature. That's the Machlokas. You see, anyway, how it seems on the surface to be, you know, a simple question. What do the 15 Amos refer to? It goes to Yisod Adas. How do we understand miracles? Was God directly imposing a change in nature in the Mabul, or did God simply sit back, so to speak, and let the waters of the flood take care of people as they were? Okay, I hope you enjoyed. It requires thinking. The Midrashim beautiful. We'll take it up again next week. Thank you.